Hi, I'm Scott Cooper, and this is the Tales from the Trail podcast by Match Play. In this episode, Justin Chesham, head coach of men's soccer at Christopher Newport University, and I welcome Andy Fleming of Andy Fleming Recruiting. Coach Fleming was the head coach of Xavier University men's soccer for 12 years and worked as an assistant coach at prominent programs for 13 more prior to arriving in Cincinnati. His coaching and recruiting experiences bring a truly unique perspective to assisting student athletes become college athletes. Make sure to check him out on Instagram at Andy Fleming Soccer for more information. Thank you, Coach Fleming, for being a great guest. Today's episode is brought to you by Pitch Invaders, the online apparel business dedicated to fostering community and growing soccer in the heart of America. Based in the vibrant soccer hub of Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders proudly champions their slogan, "The Pitch is for the People." Their mission? To unite soccer enthusiasts nationwide through their unique blend of casual and athletic gear. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about clothing. They're about collaboration, partnering with clubs, associations, and more. They create exclusive merch designs that promote their brands together. And here's the kicker. Partners receive a revenue split on collaborative merch sales to help support them. From the streets to the stadium, Pitch Invaders products boast soccer-related sayings on the back like, "You got nutmeg," "Press machine," and "Golazo getter." So whether you're cheering from the stands or dominating the field, gear up with Pitch Invaders and join the movement. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com to explore their latest collections and become part of something bigger. Use the code MATCHPLAY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. Pitch Invaders, the pitch is for the people.
Andy, you said you're from the New England area. I'm going to assume you're a Pats fan. And if you are a Pats fan, did you watch the roast?
I'm about an hour and a half into it. On the Peloton yesterday. Yeah. Man, I thought, how would I handle it if I was up there? That's not easy. There's a lot of stuff they can throw at him, too.
Wow. And they've taken off the kid gloves, too. Like, the last few roasts have kind of like backed off and – there's some legends that are no longer with us, like Geraldo. That guy was a killer up there. And it seems like they're trying to bring that style back, which I'm a comedy fan. So the harder, the better. But, yeah, I agree with you. If I was in Tom Brady's shoes, I don't think I would have agreed to go up there with how much of my life is in the world right now. No way. No chance I could do it. But I heard some funny skits. I haven't listened to it yet, but I've heard a few of the reels and some of the shorts. Yeah. So they're good. I don't think I could do it. But
funny, Belichick was very good, and they've always said he's a pretty funny guy, very dry. He did a great job.
Well, it makes sense he'd be good. He's smart, you know, like he's a bright guy, which most people don't realize how smart you have to be a good comedian. I mean, you have to put a lot of things together.
Some of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some of the funniest people I've been around were just witty. It's like, man, how did you put that together so quickly and come up with a one-liner like that? And just some of the smartest people I know, and they're just funny on top of that. So Bill Belichick, it makes sense. It's funny. Everybody teased Gronk, you know, made him out to be some Neanderthal, but you know, he was pretty good too.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're on. You know, we're in the thick of the recruiting process now. Of course, I don't know when the thick of it isn't thick, because you know, I've technically closed the book on a class, but I've got two massive events in the next 2 weeks. We've got our own ID camp, and we're trying to make our list, and the rat race has begun to get the next crop of kids on campus and start that process. So if you don't mind, tell us what you're doing, tell us what you got going on, and give us a little insight into your world, and then we're going to go from there.
So I was a 25-year Division I coach, Boston University, Northwestern as an assistant, then I was in the Big East at Xavier as the head coach for 12. I was fired from my job. Everybody says they retired or they parted ways or resigned. Like, I was fired, and I'm going to be a man about it because not enough people are. But I was paid for a significant amount of time. And I got a call one day from my agent, and my agent's son was going to play college soccer at the Division III level and really liked how it came together and liked the fit and liked the coach. And we helped him with his financial aid paperwork, so on and so forth. And he said, you know, my son's going to play, and I must have called you 15 times, and you were right about everything. He said, I'm a soccer agent. I don't know anything about this. So imagine what the average parent doesn't know. He goes, there's an industry out there that nobody's really doing on like an agent basis. And he said, you should become an agent for high school soccer players. So I sat down and looked at it. I said, well, I've been to 88 campuses, which is quite a few. I know coaches at 280 different schools. And at that time, I'd met over 700 families in the recruiting process, and I've seen the good, bad, and the ugly. And that's anywhere from Ghana to New Zealand to California to Cincinnati. And I started, you know, putting feelers out and realizing, oh, there's a need for help. And the first year was pretty good. We kind of got going like anything else, trial and error. And then this last year, we just finished our second year on May 1st, started our third year on May 2nd. It's really taken off. We've committed over 90 kids. We've had 10 guys go to the Big Ten, 6 to the ACC, 3 to the Ivy League. But then there's also kids who go to schools like yours and Emory and University of Chicago and Johns Hopkins. We've had a guy go to junior college, had 3 guys go do post-grad years. So there's really a menu for a lot of kids and a little bit for everybody. And I really have come to realize, you know, there's a need for it. As far as what do? I kind of say I'm an agent in the 8th and 9th innings. I don't like that word. I don't call myself an agent, but more so a headhunter, because this is a job process. This is a job search. And there's a lot of parallels to what the kids do now and they're going to do in 5 or 6 years. And then a family soccer advisor and a mentor, because for 12 years, I was the college dad to 30 kids at Xavier. And I've been talking to 17-year-olds on the phone for 25 years and have a pretty good bedside manner with them. So it's come together really well. I work less, I worry less, I sleep more and make more money. And that's a recipe everybody should subscribe to.
Well, by the end of this, this might be an interview for me. So, you know, we'll see how this goes. Because that last part is very true. And especially when you're in the season and if, do you have little ones? Do you have kids?
Yeah, 4.
Yeah. So you were coaching while trying to raise children. And in the fall, I'm assuming you missed out on some stuff, you know, and that's not
the biggest takeaway from all this is that right there, man. Yeah. I missed so much for what? And I'm not trying to knock coaching because I'm fond of it. But I was empty. I didn't have any more to give. I was run down, but I was also full. I feel like aside from a national championship and a Final Four, had done a lot and pretty grateful for my body of work, but also feel like I'm helping families now. And I'm still very much have a team and I'm still competitive and I'm still working hard. And I'll go to MLS Flex tomorrow and I go to the events and I'm still talking to all these guys. So it's very much a lot of the same skill set as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is right on par with, you know, what match play is. I mean, you know, Scott and I have been talking about this for years. Scott, I was in that role for Scott and his son. And, you know, I was the one giving him that feedback and helping him with, you know, where to go and what to do. And Scott was actually in the business a little bit, played some soccer and was around it and coached. And it was still a daunting task for him. And you're right. I mean, the parents that are like, yeah, none of us have done this before. My son's pretty good at soccer. What do I do? Where do I start? How do I go from here? And we need more of that. We need more information out there. We need more ability for these parents to, you know, find the home, find the right fit. And I appreciate what you're doing. So I am curious though, how does the process begin with you? Like, do the parents reach out? Do you watch film and kind of, all right, let me see what I'm working with here. And then I classify this kid into this level, you know, just kind of how does the process begin and what's your recommendation for parents listening to this and how do I reach out and what does that look like for me?
Well, I'm kind of a caveman, so I don't have a website. I want to be exclusive. A kid called me once. He goes, you're so hard to find. I like how you have to find us or be asked to be in it. You're exclusive. I did go to social media in October, and that's really been great. We have a player from Los Angeles with us, and we have players from, I think, 8 different MLS academies now. So that has helped from, you know, with our footprint. But I try to find guys that I believe in, that I can put my name on. I don't want to take just anybody. I think you should be a fringe Division I player or a bottom third Division I player or a solid career impact Division III player. I'd like to add, and maybe we'll get to this later, but I'm a big fan of Division III. And one story that I tell every kid on the sales Zoom I do is like, you're going to go to a wedding in 10 years, and you might walk up to a gal that you think is cute and say, introduce yourself, and she's not going to look at you and go, did you play in a Division I Power 5 conference and get money? Because I only talk to guys who played Division I. Nobody's going to care. So I'm big into that. But yeah, I find people that I like. I do go to most of the events. I do watch some video, but I like to try to make sure I talk to your references or I really believe in you. And then we do an intro Zoom that's 30 minutes and talk about what I have to offer. And then we get going. And it's kind of an onboarding process where what's your school list? What are you looking to do? Can I see your resume and profile and references? Can I see your video? And we put together a list, a media kit, as I call it, or a press kit, video and resume, and then what I call a summer roadmap or a winter or spring roadmap. And if you think about it, and I'll allude this again because I think it's the best way for parents to digest it, it's like finding a job. And it's something they're going to have to do a couple years later. And as you know, as a coach, that phone call or that initial Zoom or that on-campus interview is very important. And we do a lot of training for that. And then the last thing I'll say, which I don't enjoy, but is really the most important part, is being honest. That first dance I have with these families is like, here's your list. I don't think you can go to Clemson, Notre Dame, or Duke. I do think you can go to these schools, and this is probably the direction you can go in. Yeah. And most families appreciate that, but the 17-year-old is a little blindsided by it. But it also just shows you there's really no reference point or starting point for these kids, and I provide that. And honesty is probably my biggest core value and what the right people appreciate the most.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more or appreciate that more. The reality is these kids are going to find out the truth sooner or later. I would rather find it out before my senior year, before the recruiting process goes absolutely nuts and leaves me behind because I've been looking at the wrong schools this whole time. And all of a sudden I'm on the outside looking in for a place to go when I could have had someone that's in the know like yourself give me this information. And most kids don't understand this. It can't come from the coaches that are recruiting you. I mean, we're going to tell you the story anyways, because you finish a tournament, you go home and you have six missed calls and all six are from Division III schools. It's like, you're probably a Division III kid, you know, right. Or, you know, if the Dukes, the Clemsons, like you guys are in Notre Dame, if they're the ones calling you, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm probably in that world. So we do tell you a story, but I had a kid that, you know, was in our backyard here. We loved him. We were coaching him in club, and I went up to him because we had offered him a spot, and I went up to him really late in the process. I'm like, what are you going to do? Like, when are you going to figure this out? And, you know, he's like, you know, the typical 17-year-old stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't, he had mentioned, I really want to go to school. And I was like, I don't really think you could play there, man. And he said something that resonates with me today. He goes, well, you're only saying that because you want me to come play for you. Sure. It's like, all right, well, I guess you can make that argument. I truly believe what I said, but I see why you're saying that, because I'm recruiting you. Of course you think that. And so it has to come from someone in the know that they can trust, not just some guy recruiting them. And this is where I hope that your job is the most important to these kids. They show up. Coach Fleming says, this is where I think you are. I'm like, oh, thank you. I needed to know that because I haven't heard a thing from Clemson yet. Why haven't they responded to me? It's like, yeah, because you can't play there. You know, that's okay. I get to know now as a 16-year-old and not sure. At 18 when I'm still writing Clemson, and they're already working on next year's class, not even this year's class. So kudos to you. I'm glad that that's the case. And, you know, the honesty is something that these kids should be seeking out more and more, and not just assuming, well, I'm on a good ECNL team, so I'm a Division I player. Like, no, there's so much more to it than that, and you need to seek out the honesty.
We talk a lot about, you know, black and white is better than gray. Like, I'm going to – probably my biggest role is I have information. I made 48 phone calls yesterday. I'm on the phone all day. Sure. I talked to Michigan, Stanford yesterday. I mean, you name it. But I also talked to Ohio Northern, and I talked to Kenyon, and I talked to John Carroll. But my point is, like, I will give you information, and as you get older, you guys know black and white and ripping the Band-Aid off, you sleep at night knowing where you stand. You might not like the feedback, but that's better than the gray area. The other story that I like to tell is there's a dance floor and there's a line down the middle, and everybody starts on the Division III side of the dance floor until Division I comes and pokes you on the shoulder and brings you over here. And kids think it's the opposite way. Like, I'm a D1 player. Why? Because I invest in this, or I play in a league. I saw a kid start for an MLS academy, like a true MLS academy at the Generation Adidas event. And I went and watched him. And I think he's a Division III player, and he's a pretty good player. But I thought, wow, this kid starts for this team, and he's probably going to play Division III. Again, which there's nothing wrong with, but it just kind of gives you this, you know, this lack of sense of self or a lack of a starting point out there. So that's important, and clarity is important. And like you said, you know, I think 20 years ago, the club coach's role was very proud to help kids with college. And Daniel, I call some of these young guys, they're trainers. They're into getting their licenses. They're administrators. There's a lot of office work. So there's really nobody to spearhead this anymore. And I take pride in kind of filling that role.
Yeah, no, that's a good example about the MLS kid. Of course, there's MLS next across the country. I'm assuming you're talking about someone that plays for one of these academies, like a Columbus Crew, DC United.
Yes, connected with the first team. Yep.
Right. And that almost, I mean, what's the percentage of those kids that go Division I or go straight to the pros or whatever? I mean, very, very few of them go Division III. And so I bet you when you told this kid, like, look, I think your best bet's to go to like an Ohio Northern, a Kenyon, and Side note, don't give Kenyon anybody. I have to play those guys this year. They're good enough. Okay.
Yeah.
It's good that you're doing that. I'm curious, when you told that family, what was that kid's reaction? What was the family's reaction? And did you get any pushback? If you give somebody,
I haven't talked to them yet because they never followed up with me. So I'm kind of got that in my back pocket. It's very interesting. But some people are offended by it. Podcast. You know, like I've said, hey, you could go up to somebody and say, hey, your son's a punk. Your son's an idiot. He's a moron. He has a 2.0. Oh, that's all right. But hey, your son's not good enough to play Division I. They're most offended by the soccer piece. And it's such a pride thing. And I think an open mind is really important. And taking feedback is really a great starting point in all this.
Well, it's interesting. Good transition point here. Most of these kids are making decisions for the wrong reasons. Let's be real. I mean, how many examples of that do we have where a kid's like, well, especially on the girl side, you hear about it all the time. We're like, oh, Susie just committed. All of us had better commit right now. Otherwise, we're going to miss out. I mean, it's such a social craziness in their world. But even on the boys' side, Division I season's just wrapped up a week ago. That next day, there was over 300 kids in the portal. And I'm sure in the process, kids aren't saying, hey, coach, I can't wait to enter the portal after my second year of disappointment. You know, and I'm talking about those kids in the portal, the kids that are, I'm never going to play, or the coach told me, like, I need to get out of here or whatever. Like those kids, I mean, 300 kids and almost all of them were Division I because that's when their season's all wrapped up. And I mean, what's your experience with the portal? Are you talking to kids out of the portal that, you know, are now looking for a new home? Are they part of your client list as well? I mean, what's the portal like in your world?
What's interesting is now that we're going into the third year, you do have a couple kids who have gone in with my help and then coming out. But I think I've decided to really avoid the portal, mainly because you could upset somebody from a school where you like to send players to. You know what I mean? So I've done some light work on the portal, but very lower end, nothing like high priority, nothing with someone who I haven't had a prior relationship with. I think that's the first thing. The second thing that you referenced, especially on the women's side, is like usually when that first kid commits on a team, especially if somebody commits, you know, in spring or winter of junior year, there's like this onslaught of panic. And you see all these parents calling me. If I work with a client from a team and he commits, then all of a sudden I have five parents call me from this team. Like, we're behind. We're not. Everybody has three things: speed, timing, and direction.
Yep.
And I think your speed, you got to make sure you're not too slow. Okay. You might have a bunch of schools call you right away on June 15th. I've seen this a million times. And then all of a sudden they fade because you don't have a great summer. All right. Direction is really important. Making sure you're always thinking about college soccer. You have an open mind. You're taking care of your business. You're, you know, being diligent with this. And then the timing is really, you know, that's up to the market. And I was liking this to a market where, hey, I want to sell your house for $1 million. You think your house is worth $1 million. But guess what? The other agent, Zillow, MLS, they're coming back with like $650. So this is what we have. We have a $650,000 house. And some people embrace that and let the market dictate it. But other people are very headstrong and hold out. You know, the last thing I'll say is, again, this is like a job market. And, hey, I'm doing really well, and I got some schools calling me, and I'm a junior in high school. Well, the portal opened on May 1st, and we have 600 new kids. So that's 600 new applicants. And then this week in England and Germany, there's exit trials for guys who aren't getting signed to pro contracts. So now you have senior employees who are older with work experience, having played college soccer or been as old as 25 years old, as you know, trying to get the same job as you. And this is why having a B-list or 1A or a pivot point or an open mind comes into play, because this is always changing and it's a worldwide market you're up against.
Do you think you've made any changes in the last 3 years? I mean, the portal, especially right after COVID, you know, it did go crazy. It did go nuts there. And a lot of coaches had to change the way they recruited. Division I couldn't even go recruiting during that year. And so have you, from the start of your company to today, have you changed like your process at all? Or are you still kind of like, look, brutal honesty, I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel. I'm going to make the calls that I think are appropriate for you. And this is the route that I want to go? Or has that changed at all?
I don't know if you remember like when you first took over your program, but you're building it and you kind of got to be a little more open-minded and bend a little with recruits because you're trying to get them to go. And then once you become successful, you're a little more confident in your honesty. I think in the last year, I've been very honest with families because I don't want you to transfer, and I owe it to you to be honest, and you need to pursue fit. All right. And I think that's the biggest thing. I'm very confident in my honesty now, because in the beginning, I needed people to sign up and I wanted this to get off the ground. And now the body of work speaks for itself, and I can be very confident in my honesty. I always tell kids two things. One, chase fit. So I always say in the Zoom, the most important thing I'm going to say today is fit. I am a fit finder. I'm not an ATM machine. You laugh at that. I'm not a Division I magician. I'm not a miracle worker, but I'm a fit finder. And here's what fit is. 20 years from now, you still go to your alumni game. Your coach went to your wedding. Your teammates went to your wedding. And you're a husband. You're an employee. You're a father. You're a man. And where you go to school and who you play for, if it fits, that's in your blood forever. And I get goosebumps talking about it because that's what I sold in recruiting. Yep. Here's what you don't want to chase. The 40-hour announcement, I call it. You have a hat on signing day. It's a big conference. It looks good and sounds good. And then all of a sudden you go there and you're like, I never really liked this place. I just wanted the sizzle. Or the parents wanted the cocktail hour. Hey, where's Joe going to school next year? Well, he's going here. You know what I mean? And like, that really doesn't fit Joe, but it sounds good. When kids talk about a stadium or a locker room or, you know, the training table or flying charter, that's great. But I don't think that comes up in a job interview. I don't think that makes you a person later on. So if you pursue the right things and you chase fit, I think that's the biggest thing that I never get away from. And I take not pride in placing kids, but we don't have a return on it yet, but making sure kids don't leave. I did have a kid just to finish. He's a freshman at Wash U in St. Louis. He could have went to Princeton. And I said to the mother, I really think he belongs at Wash U. It's a better fit. And they called me this fall and said he loved it. And that was early on where I could have had a kid go to Princeton for my marketing and wave that flag. But I learned early on that I got to make sure these people are happy and I got to be honest with them and deliver on fit.
Well, it's interesting. You just brought up that point. You brought up a great Division III school. I mean, Wash U academically is incredible. Obviously, Princeton's one of the best schools in the world, but Wash U is incredible. And it's amazing how many clubs, and I'm not trying to like pick on them or anything here, but you'll see them brag about what you just talked about. Oh, we are sending a kid to Princeton. Let's really harp on that. They don't really harp on the Wash U kid as much. And you almost never see the clubs really talk about any of the successes of the kids that are gone now, unless they are like, oh, this kid also went pro. It's like, oh yeah, that's easy, low hanging fruit to brag about. But what about the kid that went to Wash U and, you know, Wash U on the women's side won the national title, was in the Final Four or something, man, brag about that kid. Like this is one of our kids playing in a massive D3 Final Four tournament. It's just such an awesome experience. You don't see that too often. And it's a little bit of a bummer. It seems like they're trying to sell the, hey, look at all the ACC, Big Ten, all these big time schools that we're sending kids to, which don't get me wrong, that is important, but I want what percentage of your club is going to one of those schools? And, you know, just little Johnny who just wants to know like, hey, do I have a chance to go somewhere? Can it be the right place? And yeah, I love the word fit. I think that that's massive. I'm a Division III coach and you're going to have to pay to come to school here. So fit has to be perfect. They want me to win games, but they also want me to graduate you. And they also want you to, you know, our retention rate to be 100%. And so you don't want to go to a school and not graduate. You don't want to go to a school and transfer because you hate it. And too many kids are still committing and going to places for those reasons. And, I like that you're talking about fit. So let's hop into that. I want to know kind of what are your main criteria? We talk about this quite a bit, but, you know, it's all over the place, it seems like, but there's a few, five or six that are just the standard. What do you really harp on when you're talking about the word fit?
I think as an adult, and it's been scientifically proven, and this is the only time I'll go into science on this, but your gut aligns with your brain. So gastronomically, you know, aligns with neurologically, like you feel fit. You feel big decisions as you get older. And I, after 15 minutes on a visit, could tell if a kid was probably going to go to Xavier or not. We kind of felt it. I think you have to chase that. When I was at Xavier early on, the athletic director who hired me, Mike Babinski, he's now at Purdue. He's a basketball guy. He's known as one of the best basketball administrators in the country. He was the chairman of the NCAA selection committee for March Madness. And I would go in the office and talk to him about it because I'm a huge college basketball fan. He said, hey, for the bubble teams, we get down to eight teams. We put them all on the wall in the ballroom. We cover the name up. And then we have three or four bullet points with their bragging points or their negatives or their resume for each program. Each team has a number because there's no name to speak for. And then we go through and vote and you pick what numbers you want. And then we take, here are the four numbers that we picked. And then we'll peel the names off. Oh, we picked Wichita State. We picked Stephen F. Austin. Who didn't we pick? Michigan, Florida, Texas. I think sometimes you get to try to do that where like, I don't want to have name bias. I don't want to have recency bias. I don't know about you, but I always wanted someone to come on our visit last because I'm like, we're the last impression we can make. Mm-hmm. If somebody visited us first and then, you know, did three more, I didn't think we were going to get them. Yep. So I think it's important to really you know, forget the name and just think about how you felt. And really, I think the biggest thing is the head coach. I always thought that was a huge reason. You can't chase an assistant coach because, as you know, they probably won't be there. And I was in a unique situation where I left Boston University, did all the recruiting, and I had to deal with kids who were coming there because of me, verbatim from the parents. Then same thing at Northwestern. And then I inherited a job at Xavier where kids had committed to the prior coach. So I've seen both sides of it. And I think you almost can't commit to an assistant for sure. Probably commit to the head coach, but you also just got to commit to a school in the event he's not there or she's not there. And if you get injured and you stop playing soccer, you're really happy.
Right. Right. It's interesting. I love the gut to brain thing. I mean, one of the biggest messages we tell kids is just get your butts on these campuses. You'll know, just even if you say, all right, I'm gonna give everybody a 5-minute test. I'm gonna walk into campus and walk for 5 minutes and go right back to my car. You just told yourself a massive story. So many kids can walk in and your first reaction is, or wow, yeah, okay, cool. Well, that's a massive piece of the puzzle here. You're gonna be able to tell yourself, I can see myself going to school here for 4 years. So many kids don't do that. I mean, it's amazing how often you see that. It really is.
Yeah, and as you know, this is like online dating now. It's like, well, their website looked great, or I did a Zoom with a coach, and he told me I'm great, and everything looks great, and they sent me this video. Well, yeah, I always joke, admissions doesn't have people kneeled over crying on a rainy day on their website, right? It's sunny and everybody's smiling. So that's the ideal day. So why don't you go feel it and, you know, go on an actual in-person date? And a lot of us, like you said, I always believe if I can get somebody on this campus, I have a pretty good shot of getting them. But either you're in or you're out and you feel it or you don't. You can't fault kids who don't feel it. You can't force someone as a coach or a parent to go where they don't want to go.
Right. Well, do you have any, and we love stories here. Do you have any, like, hey, leave the names off, or if you got one about a coach or a school, you can leave those off. But do you have some stories that would really resonate with some kids here or as a coach? You know, like I'm always up for learning some new tactics here. And so if you have a story where, like, man, I got to remember not to do that. Or you have anything fun, anything interesting that you could really share with us? Because that's usually the best part of this podcast.
I have two that I'll use that I use a lot. And I'm chuckling because I haven't told them in a while. But there was a boy from Brenham, Texas, which is outside of Houston. I'll never forget it. 2001, Zach Riffitt. He was the U.S. national team goalie in residency. He was the National High School Player of the Year. And I was this young hotshot assistant coach. And I called him on July 1 and I said, I'm going to get Zach Riffitt. And he said on July 1, Coach, I'm going to stay in the South. I like those bigger schools. I'm probably going to go to South Carolina or North Carolina, but thanks. I said, well, if you ever change your mind, call me back. So he called me like, I think October 1st. And he said, hey, I've been on some visits. I don't like the offers. The schools are a little too big. They're kind of pressuring me. I'd like to visit BU. So we came in to visit, went crazy, worked my butt off, did everything I could. We give him a deadline of October 28th. So on October 27th, I'm about to leave my office. It's about 8:30 at night, back when I used to work till 8:30. And I said, what haven't I done for this guy? And I looked at his profile. I said, I've never called his high school coach. So I call his high school coach and he says, Coach, y'all did a great job. He liked you a lot. He had a great visit, but he's a big college football fan and he wants SEC and he loves those football Saturdays and he's going to be a Gamecock next year. So I hang the phone up and I'm distraught and sad and a little confused because he said he didn't want to go there. So Zach calls me the next morning. I'm driving to work. He goes, hey, Coach, it's Zach. I said, hey, man. He goes, what's wrong? I'm like, well, I heard. I go, let's get it over with. Tell me. He goes, no, I want to commit to BU. I want to come to Boston. I said, I called your high school coach last night. He told me you were going to go to South Carolina. He said, my high school plays in the spring. My high school coach is the offensive line coach in the fall for our football team. He wanted me to go to South Carolina so I could get free football tickets and he could come visit me. So my point with that is make sure you have the right people endorsing you and helping you because you never know right. Who they may call and they might, you know, point you in the wrong direction. So if you want to fill in with that a little bit after that one, I do have a second one I want to tell, but I don't want to tell them that.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, all right. I do have a question on top of that. So you mentioned something where you're getting pressure from coaches. It's something we come across all the time where someone says, hey, I'd love for you to come play for us. You got 48 hours though. You got 24 hours though. And I got this other kid. So it's either you get it or the other guy gets it. And the first one to call me is going to get the scholarship or whatever. What's your message to those kids? I mean, that's a loaded thing to tell a 17-year-old and a family that has no idea what's going on. Like, oh, yeah, by the way, you've got 36 hours to make this decision. I mean, how do you handle those situations?
Well, the first thing is it does happen for you people listening. Yeah. Like, it sounds crazy, but you know, you got to forget, yeah, this is not IBM. This is not Wall Street, as you say, but it is a business. It's, yep, not cutthroat. It's not football, basketball, but it is a business. We've had four guys offered NIL money this year, and that's coming into play a little bit. So there usually is, if there's a big offer, there's a deadline. Tooting my own horn, you know, patting myself on the back. We had a kid with a 48-hour deadline that was able to call that coach. He got extended to a month. We had another guy with a 72-hour deadline this year. They didn't extend it, and he ended up committing there. And he was also going away with a first team to MLS preseason the day after the visit and couldn't go anywhere else, and he kind of had to go there. He wanted to go there, in case the coach is listening, but I'm just telling you this happens. Here's what I say is, number one, you have to respect the coach and understanding he wants you. That's why he's doing this, okay? The coach should respect that this is a kid, and they should have an open mind, and hopefully if a coach or somebody like myself gets involved, they can extend it, all right? But here's what I say a lot, and now that I'm not a coach, I can say it. If this is your first rodeo with this person, and they're supposed to be pulling the chair up for you and bringing you flowers and opening the door, and they're acting like this, what are they going to be like when they get there and they're comfortable with you? It's probably going to go the other direction. Like, it's not going to be great. So I'm supposed to endear myself to you and really tell you I like you and cooperate and show some love. Using the word love about recruiting, yeah, some love, yeah, literally and figuratively, and I'm not. But that can happen. So the last thing I'll say is, like, and I find this a lot, hey, I want to be recruited. I want action. Or, hey, Mr. Fleming, we have 10 schools you've heard from. We don't need your help. Or, this is really great. I'm getting phone calls, visited. You can see the smile and everybody thinks this is great. At some point, this will get crappy, especially for someone dealing with Division I scholarship offers. Yep. And you have to understand it's going to be stressful because these are companies that want to hire you. There's money involved. And if I'm a coach and you know cheese, I don't want to lose four guys at once. So I don't want to wait for you forever. And I'm holding off on three other guys. Then I look up after 2 months and I've lost four people.
Yeah.
I will say that I waited 5 months and 6 months for two guys in the end at Xavier. And they both ended up transferring. This is how it is. You have all the control. You call the shots. I'll do whatever you say. Then they get to school and they think, like, oh, that's how this relationship was and is going to be. And I think it is important on the coach's side that he establishes that, like, hey, this is a business. This is what it's like. And they have to have some control over this because, right, the student athlete and the prospect can't have all the control.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about honesty early in the podcast. And I think if the coaches are being honest with the kid, then it's going to include, like, look, I'd love for you to commit right now. I get it if you want to take some time here, but the reality is I need to leave with a starting center mid in this class. And if you don't want it, that's fine. Or if you do want it, that's fine. It's, if you want to take your time, that's also okay. But I'm going to recruit assuming you're not coming. That's always what kind of like my messaging is. I have to come out with you or a guy exactly like you or better. And so I'm going to keep recruiting. The spot's yours. But if I find another kid, I'm calling you. I'm calling you on the spot, and then it might be a tough conversation there. So please do your homework quick. You know, I'm coming after you. We got a big event coming up. And so I've told that to a bunch of kids. You know, like, I definitely want to try to be respectful of their timing. But you're right. I can't just sit on that. I can't sit on that with 8, 9 kids and then not get any of them. And then March rolls around, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to have a class, or I'm going to have a class.
You can't have your cake and eat it. Like, all these kids, I want offers. I want to be recruited. I want this. And then it happens. Like, well, this is going to be on my terms. Like, you don't get both sides. You don't control both sides of the narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are, I mean, if a coach says, no, it has to be 48 hours or it has to be 72 hours, there's a high probability that guy has another player that he also really likes. Because very rarely do you see them do that. And they're like, all right, I'm calling this kid's bluff. And then he doesn't say yes. And he goes, no, I need a month, or I'm going to wait and kick the can down the road a little bit. And you're like, oh, crap, I don't have a guy now. And some of the time frames are small, really small, especially at the high, high, high levels.
And I think right now it's really pertinent because think about it. May 1 transfer portal just opened. Maryland Flex event coming up here. A lot of juniors who people have seen or had on campus that can make final decisions on. So if you're a rising senior listening to this or a transfer, or maybe even a rising junior after June 15th in the phone calls, I do think the next 8 weeks are going to be a little bit of a rapid pace type of tempo to it all. And then we've all seen in the fall, it slows down a little bit. Early winter, it slows down. Then ID camps start again in February. You come off the MLS or the winter events in December. So there's all sorts of pulsing and tempo to this, and there's fast times and slow times. And I do think two things. One, we're coming up on a fast time right around the corner. And if you're a rising junior or 2026 grad, the summer before your senior year is the most underutilized and underappreciated segment or stanza of this. You can get a lot done. You can get for SAT in the next couple of weeks. You can get on visits. You can get to camps. You can obviously get phone calls. And I think your junior year starts now, and you can make up a lot of ground. And those who commit early tend to sign on with me at the end of their sophomore year, and or even if they're not with me, get a lot done this summer leading into their junior year.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Another question. So you brought up NIL there, and I actually have one more about kind of the phrase free kid that I've heard a lot. You said you got a couple kids doing NIL stuff now. What is that looking like to you? We're a smaller school. We've got our NILs like Bojangles down the road, you know, so we've got some small stuff going on. But then you see like some of these kids making more money in college than they ever would as a professional athlete in their sport. And I'm talking football kids, basketball kids making more money in college than the first pick in the draft would make. It's just bizarre. And so what are you seeing? What's your messaging for that? And, you know, I'm assuming if I were to ask you again in 5 years, it would change because that's how kind of new and chaotic it is right now. But what are you telling kids?
And I think you've probably heard just from me speaking, like the fact that I was a coach and I do this, it makes me very valuable because I see it through the coach's eyes. Hey, this is why he's giving you a deadline. I get it. But I also am on the other side now and I'm, you know, representing the recruit. When I got to Xavier, we had $1,500 in the fundraising budget. When I left Xavier, we had $250,000 in the fundraising budget. So that was a big part about what I did. And I wanted to run it like a Clemson and say, we can do whatever we want. I don't ever worry about money. But we also had to do 5 flights a year to play Big East games, not to get sidetracked. But my point is, I think about the job now, and now you'd have to also fundraise for NIL money. Right. And we had cost of attendance money at Xavier. So that's like money you can give somebody in the summer for summer school. You can add on to scholarships. Well, we finally got that in the Big East, and that was a big deal. And now you have NIL. And now you have schools in the ACC and Big Ten with what's called Alston money, where right. each kid either gets $6,000 a year or $8,000 a year or a percentage of that. So if I'm on 25% at certain Big Ten schools, I get 25% of $8,000, which is the max amount. And you can get NIL money. So now there's certain schools where they're mixing and matching. And I had a dad say to me, hey, I heard so-and-so got 125% scholarship. And I sat there for a second and I said, you know what? Let me call the coach. And I called him. He goes, yeah. And I go, I've never heard that.
Yeah.
125%. So he got NIL and Alston on top of a full ride. Wow. And especially if you're not flying to where you go, like you're pocketing money and making money. And that's exhausting to think about as a coach, but exciting to think about it. We have 3 kids on it. We don't have 15. And I think the average kid can't expect it, but you never know. And sometimes it gets written in the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's a crazy chaotic world. There's a lot of coaches. Now I'm 41, but I still feel like I'm more of like an old school guy. So like that type of stuff, like just drives me nuts. And you see these famous coaches that are stepping away from sports or very vocal on the ESPNs or on Twitter or whatever about this whole process. You know, Gina Auriemma made a big comment about how am I supposed to coach kids that feel like I owe them something. They don't owe me anything, you know, and Nick Saban's been very vocal about like,
how much can you pay me? How much am I going to play? Yeah. He said, that's all they ask.
Exactly. You know, we had a guy on the Auburn associate AD and he said that it's not relational anymore. It's transactional. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's not why we originally started being coaches. You know, none of us were rich when we started these jobs, and we did it because we love the relationships. And that seems to be going away. That is a sad thing. That's a sad state of the world right now.
The one thing I've seen now in year 3 is also some kids I work with, like, hey, can you help me find another club? And I don't enjoy that. And then we've only had like 2 or 3. But I've also realized how transient these people are and like, hey, it's not going well, on to the next place. I'm like, wow. But I do compliment them and respect them because it's important. And some of these kids, like, I got to drive an hour to training. Like, hey, we have people living in apartments here in Cincinnati that play for the FC Cincinnati Academy team all over the country. We have people with host families around the country. We have international students coming over to go to university here. And you think your sacrifice is hard. Like, I do respect the families that want it. But being from Boston, it's really reminding me of college hockey, where there's junior hockey and kids do a gap year and you're starting college a little bit older. And there's all sorts of academies now here and prep schools and PG stuff. And I think when I was growing up, there were three kids in my high school who went to high school Monday through Thursday, never saw them on the weekend. They lived in an apartment and they were playing junior hockey. And I think it's become that. But on the other side of it really is a contract for some, not for most. And that's why I think the fit in the college part has to be taken a little more seriously and appreciated, because soccer will end in college for most of these kids. And that's something I always preach as a coach.
Shifting gears a little bit here. When you talk to coaches about a kid, are there some phrases that you hear that kind of like ding, you know, that kind of rings a bell for how they rate a kid? And I say that because I'll hear from Division I buddies like, yeah, we think he might be a good free kid for us, you know, emphasizing the word free, because they know that, well, I'm not going to have to pay a dime out of my my scholarship money. Could be a good player. Like, they usually are really good players that could possibly play there, but they're in state or they have the good academics, you know, so they can find some money that way. Or maybe the family's well off, so they don't need to worry about that. Are there any kind of like red flag phrases or words where you're like, what does that mean? Or that maybe a kid today can hear, I'm like, oh, okay, so that's the type of verbiage I want to make sure I'm listening for.
What's fascinating about my role now is like I probably know more about college soccer than anybody in the country as far as who does what, who doesn't show up for Zooms, who forgets to show up for visits, who makes offers and doesn't follow up on them, different ways to do things, different ways to do ID camps, deadlines. There's a lot of creativity. There's a lot of people who aren't organized. And there's a lot of things that I would love to go coach a program, not full time, but just for a month, because I would do things a little differently. I say that because I talk to coaches for a living. And here's the one that comes up a lot now, because most of the kids we're dealing with, here's what I always say. When you went to high school and you were a freshman, you were physically not ready. You and are the seniors. You kissed the coach's butt. You did what the senior said. You had to wait your turn. Maybe you played JV. When you go be a professional, you listen to the veterans. You don't get paid a lot of money. You probably need to play in reserve games. You might not travel. You pay your dues. But for some reason, when we go to college, we expect right away to have instant gratification. And the question that drives me the craziest is, how much can I play as a freshman? Oh, why? So 1 year is going to define everything? Like, how about, what does the 4 years look like? What do my second, third, and fourth years look like? So that's the question that parents and kids tend to ask the most, which bother me. As far as, you know, the coaches, can he handle not playing? That's the one I hear a lot now. Yep. I can tell you the coach that asked it to me the first time, and now I've heard it several times since. How would he handle not playing? Because if you think about it, you're going to go sit at a game on the bench, especially in Division I freshman year, and your parents are going to be there, and they're going to have their shirts on, and it's new, and it's exciting, and you're going to walk across the field after the game, the tailgate, and be like, I just didn't get in the game, and I've never not played before. And it might take 2 years to get in a game. And now, and I don't know if you're going to get to this later, we'll table it, but you have the new substitution rules, okay? And I think that's going to lead to more transfers. And if we're up 7-0, I can't empty the bench, and that's even more of a problem. So I think not playing is a big one. What are the parents like? Because parents can scare coaches. You can make your son or daughter unrecruitable. But going back to your original point, I hate to say this because you don't want to show your hand, but like, I've had family say to me, hey, price is no issue, cost is no issue, tell the coach that. And you always love to hear that. And in a school like Xavier and a lot of the Jesuit schools, we had great ability to stack, where if you had a 1200 SAT or a 3.5 GPA, you got $25,000 to start. In my final year, we had $600,000 of merit aid on our roster, which I can combine a little bit of soccer aid to, and it really facilitates my salary cap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, once they start stacking the scholarships, that was a you noticed the schools where practically every kid's now going for free that can play there, and then you add NIL on top of that, and you probably have some schools out there where everybody's got 125% scholarship, and that's really changed the world. I'm curious your thoughts, or if you've heard anything on basically taking the Power 50 schools, separating them out, and treating them like. I'm sure it's a big football or basketball conversation, but I mean, maybe it trickles down to the Olympic sports. I'm not sure. But have you heard anything? I mean, what do you think that looks like where they basically.
I think it's becoming more real, you know, especially when I'm in Big Ten country. I'm talking to those guys quite a bit. I just think it stinks, though, because you talk about like, social status or social climbing or a totem pole, like there's going to be a line down the middle and you're either in that and recruited by that or not. And we know now how all these kids want that. And I think it's going to be so defined. And then I think if you go to a school and do well, you're going to want to transfer into that world. The other thing I think is interesting, if you look at the Big Ten, for example, acquiring Washington and UCLA, that's great overall. But like, I still think of the women's soccer player, men's soccer player, tennis player, softball player, who's flying, you know, to Rutgers from UCLA to play a softball game, and they're losing money on the trip. And someone had to fundraise all this money to have a program. And now you're adding on four more flights. And even though the football money is going to offset that and the basketball money, I still think it's really time consuming and exhausting. And from a time management and academic standpoint, it's funny. So, and I think the other thing that comes up quite a bit are these MLS 2 contracts and these USL contracts. The kids taking them or not taking them, and really what they're worth, and what a 15-year, investment and return on your investment is if you to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's I tell you, more people need, people like you, or get lucky and have a college coach as your club coach that's going to be blunt with you more than ever. You brought up the sub rules. The D1 sub rules. I mean, that's one of the key factors here. Ours aren't changing, but D1, just for people that don't understand college rules, once you start in the first half, if you sub out, there's no reentry. In the second half, there used to be one reentry. So once you subbed in and you were on the field and you came off the field, you were allowed to reenter one time. And they've now scratched that to once you check out in the second half, you're out again. So you could still sub out in the first half, but then in the second half, you could start it or sub in. But once you sub back out, you're now done. And yeah, do some quick math for yourself. Now these guys are going to be, they better be more fit. They're going to play the top guys a little bit longer. And chances are, let's say you've got the 9.9 scholarships, a handful of stackable stuff to make it look like 14, 15 total scholarships. Those guys are going to be ones that are going to be on the field that whole time. I mean, you're just going to see it, unless you're going to really have to play your way through. So I think you're right. I think that will lead to more portal entries. I'd be interested to see what happens to roster sizes. I mean, what type of trickle down are you going to see from some of the decisions?
I mean, first, as a coach, what people don't realize is you have exit interviews. At some schools, you have questionnaires filled out. At some schools, they're anonymous at the end of the year by an 18-year-old who's not playing. And I think as a coach, I'd like to give carrots and give kids minutes here and there to try to keep them happy or try to develop guys. And then you're not getting even that. Like, as I indicated prior, you're up 7-0 and you can't even put guys in. I think that's tricky. And I think from a job security standpoint, the guys who drive this usually are the guys who have been at schools for 20 years and have 18 NCAA tournaments. And they're like, hey, I'm set so I can, but I just, the first thing I thought of as a coach, but more so my job now, is like just more transfers, because playing time is currency. And you can't fake playing time. And when I coached at Northwestern, the head coach would always start this at the freshman orientation for the parents. Our relationship over 4 years and from fall to fall will largely be defined on how much your kid plays. Mm-hmm. And you can respect a kid and get him an internship and pay for his education and be there for him, be a father figure, and he can grow up and have great relationships. But at the end, so many coaches have told me, senior day, graduation, the banquet, so much stuff comes from playing time, and that stinks. And that's already a tough point where so many jobs are lost over unhappy players. And now you're probably going to make that, number one, more unhappy players, and number two, more transfers. And then a lot of guys catch grief from their bosses when people transfer, and then the whole market gets diluted. And most importantly, we're teaching the kids, if things don't go well, you just go somewhere else. And I don't think you do that as an employee later on.
Yeah.
I'm sounding like a coach again. Sorry.
Well, I mean, look, I am still doing it, and it's everything you're saying. I'm like, as soon as you mentioned the parent thing, I go, yeah, I ran into, it's graduation week, and I'm thinking last year, graduation week, I ran across parents at a Panera Bread, and I'm like, oh, hey, this kid played for me. Hey, how are you? And they were like, coach. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. The kid didn't play that much. The kid was.
And I brought that up because another coach told me the same thing that happened to him last week. So this isn't my story. This is what I hear when I'm on the phone, and it's all about nighttime.
All of us can do that. And I tell people all the time, it's like, unless I only have 11 kids on my roster, they're all playing the exact position that they want to play, because that's something they'll complain about. They want to play different spots. So now they're getting 90 minutes of the exact position. We better win every game, and we better play the exact style that these kids want to play, and you better get 11 guys that all want the same thing. So right there, that's the only way to get a perfect world. You add just one kid to that. Now we're at 12, and I'm going to sub him in. He's going to play a ton. Player 12 is mad that he's the only one on the bench. Player 12 is like, why am I not the one starting? And then you take off player 11 for player 12, and now player 11 saying, oh, man, I'm the first sub. Like, that's how much you value me. You're like, geez, like, there's just no winning in this. And I'm not trying to do a woe is us soccer coaches thing, but it's reality, you know? I mean, like, I love these kids. I love them. And I tell these parents, like, I already love your son, but you're right. The Northwestern coach you're discussing was 100% correct. By the end of it, if the kids played, the parents are still super happy.
The kids and I do think play, the MLS Academy guys, particularly goalkeepers, who don't get rostered, don't dress or have to sit or have to, you know, move up and down, they actually are better prepared for college because they've already gone through it. And I do talk about that with college coaches. Hey, how's he as a goalkeeper? He's good, but listen, he trains with the second team. So he trains with pros. He knows how to be the third goalie when he trains with them. And he knows his job is to get the first guy ready. He rotates or he gets benched, or at MLS Academy, you have people coming in all the time trying to take your spot and it's fluid and it's transient. And it's transactional at times, and I think that better serves kids. So even though you're on the top of the mountain right now as a high school player and elite club player, I think there's not any adversity in this. And when they get to college, it's usually their first soccer adversity. And with that comes panic and fight or flight. And unfortunately now, starting with the parents, it's usually flight. So one thing I try to do is just educate these people on what it's going to be like. And hey, if this is your soccer decision or college decision, here are some things that are going to come along with it that aren't great that you might want to think about and just kind of look at it as like a 3 or 4 year decision, not something right in front of me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great advice. A ton of great advice in this episode. You want to share that last story? I don't know if we touched on anything that might have triggered it.
So there was a kid, and I'll share his name because it's a great story. His name's Kevin Sindelar, and he played for Potomac in Maryland. And it was, I want to say, 2001. And I went to the Potomac Memorial Day event. So Kevin Sindelar would send these emails at the time. And it was before YouTube and videos weren't really in vogue. But I think his father was like a big marketing guy in D.C. And he would play James Bond music. And he'd come out with a suit on and like kick a soccer ball. And then he'd send these mailings on pink paper with like these big fonts with like, you know, flashing letters. Then he sent me a message one day. Coach, I broke my nose last week, but don't worry. Versace renewed my modeling contract. And I still had 3 girls ask me to prom. So I go to the game at Potomac, and I put my chair down. I'm looking around, and Wake Forest comes over. Penn comes over. Georgetown comes over. Boston College. I'm like, hey, do you get those emails from this kid? I'm like, yeah, so do I. And we're talking about the emails, and we were all there to see the kid. And he ended up being a good player, and he ended up going to Georgetown, and we played against him 1 year, I remember. And I'm pretty sure he's probably in Westchester County or somewhere in Northern Virginia right now with a Georgetown degree and probably some money in the bank and a nice life because he was able to use his creativity to get people's attention to go watch him play and land at Georgetown. So I always joke when I speak at camps, like, don't light yourself on fire and like jump through the window here. But like, this is a job search and you need to be different and unique and you need to go be persistent and proactive. And you have to find an angle, whether you're left footed, 6'3", 38 inch vertical leap, you know, state champion wrestler. My father was in the Olympics. My uncle is a donor at the school. Like, find a way to get their attention and make yourself noteworthy so they can look at you. And there's different ways onto a roster other than just playing soccer or just kind of going to a tournament.
Yeah, I tell kids all the time, you know, especially when these events are coming around, like the Jeff Cup rolled around, I got hundreds and hundreds of emails. I can't delete your email fast enough. I got that phrase from a great coach that says, what am I supposed to do? Read all of these, watch all your film. I mean, I'm married, I have kids, I have another life. You know, it's like, I'm not going to do that. And so we're looking for reasons to delete your emails, it seems like at times. And I won't delete the ones that, like you just mentioned, they really catch my eye. If I'm watching your film, put your best goal right away. Put your best moments early. Like, okay, good. Whoa, love these moments. I'm going to watch the rest. Put in your first paragraph of your email that big connection that I'm going to love. Yeah. Boom, put in there right away. I'm going to read the rest. If you're boring, if you got a video where I can't even figure out who you are, it's just a clip and you say I'm number 8. It's like, now I got to figure out where number, like, no, get this stuff with the highlighting and all that fun stuff so I can pick up who you are right away. and then give me the good stuff. Give me it right away so you can catch me for the rest of the email, for the rest of the communication. You know, it's sound advice. You really knocked it out of the park. I appreciate, you know, what you were saying there.
Do you mind if I just finish? So my email address is aflemsoccer@gmail.com. So that's AFLEM soccer@gmail.com. If you go to Top Drawer Soccer, the website, in the player rankings, the top 200 players in each age group, there is some advertising with some more information as far as what I do. Be interested in hearing from you. You can reach out to me. Happy to look at your video. If you're going to MLS Flex, I will be there if you want to take a look. And certainly do everything from a newsletter, trimesterly per year for families, subscription, as well as consult. And then obviously the full A to Z where I represent you and advise you and help you find a job, like I said. And I think you can tell I know this stuff inside out. I know a lot of the people involved. And the biggest thing is I would sit at tournaments and Ivy League guy, Notre Dame guy, should be a Division III guy, should go pro. He's going to transfer three times. His father's crazy. And then a year later, people come up to me and say, man, you pegged a lot of these guys. How do you know? And you either have instincts and feel for this stuff or you don't. And I tend to think my insight is unique and of use. And I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, you're going to see a kid and he's going to remind you of a kid from 20 years ago and what his story was.
Yeah, and I use that a lot when I call coaches. I'm like, you know who he reminds me of? And that's how we all work, right? We all use those references all the time.
Oh, yeah, those player comps are real. But no, thank you, Andy. I'll be there. I'll be on the back end of it this weekend. Are you going to ECNL as well in Virginia?
No, just my wife has to travel for work, so I got to get in and get out. I'll be there Friday and Saturday. And again, feel free to contact me if anything pops up.
I will. We'll reach out. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Tales from the Trail podcast by Match Play. If you're enjoying the podcast and find it valuable, please consider visiting buymeacoffee.com/matchplay. These small donations collectively help offset costs and other expenses associated with production of the podcast, so I can continue to offer this service for free. Please take an extra minute to rate and review the podcast where you listen. This is a huge help. Share the podcast with whomever you think would be interested and will help in their process. Check us out on matchplayrecruit.com for our social media links. See you on the trail.